This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the Milkpacking District, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
The FBI investigates Christine O'Donnell. A man is shot near the Gresham Transit Center, and a food bank joins forces with a pot club to get donations.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this. Is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, December 30th, 2010. A gunshot wound victim was taken to the hospital after an incident at the Gresham Transit Center late last night. The victim tried to board a bus after being shot near Northeast 8th and Kelly at around 8:30 p.m. Police responded and he was taken to the hospital.
Hold on, let me understand this. I want to make sure that I've got this absolutely clear, that there is in no way, no misunderstanding going on, that in no way, manner, shape, fashion, function, or form am I misapprehending the nature of the story.
Okay.
There was a shooting.
A guy was shot, yes.
At a transit center in Gresham.
Yes, shocking as that might be.
You're sure you've got it right?
It was...
Gresham,
Oregon. The shooting may have only happened near the Gresham Transit Center.
All right, but we are talking about Gresham in our fair state.
Yes.
Not somewhere else.
Shocking.
At a transit center.
Yes. You
a
know,
shooting.
Where the buses are.
In Gresham.
Gresham.
Okay.
So a guy was shot, and then he got on the bus.
Really?
I guess
in Gresham?
You're not...
sure? I want to make sure that I'm not misunderstanding this report in any way.
Now, the shooting apparently actually happened within the city limits of Gresham, Oregon.
Okay. Well, if that's what the story says, then I mean it must be true. Who am I to challenge?
Yeah, so he was shot, got on the bus. It says police responded and he was taken to the hospital. Are you not allowed to be on the bus after you've been shot?
Well, I would imagine the other passengers might find it disconcerting, even for that part of the world. Mm. I mean, who am I to say? Maybe they just don't like the idea that there's going to be a guy just oozing bodily fluids near
them. Maybe. So the Gresham Police gang team was helping with the investigation, but have not said that the shooting is gang-related. They said there could be three suspects, but no one has been captured. Apparently, three men approached the victim around 8:30 p.m. near the intersection of Northeast 5th and Kelly in Gresham and fired at him.
Okay.
And then he got on the bus.
All right, then. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday, December 30th, 2010. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, we have entertainment news, also science on the march. If you'd like to get this program on your mobile device, you can do it. It's mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm.
FM. You can also get this show as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com and later on the day via iTunes as well.
So many possibilities.
Here is Dawn Taylor making you smarter by the moment.
Police have announced additional arrests stemming from a December 11th raid on a White City, Oregon cockfighting ring. The Mail Tribune newspaper reports the Jackson County Sheriff's Office has served warrants on two houses where they discovered 100 chickens, many of them fighting roosters, and cockfighting paraphernalia.
And this is in Jackson?
This is Jackson, Oregon, which is near Medford.
Okay, all right.
A sheriff's spokeswoman said while deputies served warrants, 53-year-old Johnny R. Keezer fled and tried to hide in a building on his property. Keezer was charged with probation violation. Police say a second man, 40-year-old Raymond D. Hinthorne, was charged with hindering prosecution because he tried to hide Keezer, ostensibly in that building.
I can't tell if any of these names call for my southern accented shout or not.
I think Johnny R. Keezer.
I thought about doing the, Johnny R. Keezer, you get that cock off the lawn. Okay, now that works.
Yeah,
all right,
see.
Now if you do the story again, I'll be prepared.
Okay. So in addition to the roosters and the chickens and the cockfighting paraphernalia, which is just a delightful thing to say,
what
by the way.
What sort of paraphernalia do you think is required? Do they have like little like vests that
little
they wear?
Boxing gloves.
You know, yeah, just, you know, like a sort of like a robe that they wear as they're walking from the dressing room to the ring.
Yeah, there's those little things they slip into their beak so they don't hurt their teeth.
They have like a little tiny like chicken manager who follows behind them and sort of squawks like Burgess Meredith.
Styptic pencils.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in addition to the cockfighting paraphernalia, they also found 53 pounds of marijuana, a half ounce of methamphetamine, and cash.
Okay. By the way, the sound for today, for some reason, when I'm printing, it's just coming out as a whole lot of blank pages. So, but we had ink just moments ago, right? Like, you printed some things.
Yeah, and, it doesn't look badly printed. It's just not printed at all.
Yeah, and it's not like I can't print. I can. It's just none of the text is actually showing up. So I have put that as a... I have exported that to your Dropbox folder.
Okay.
So if you want to look there and... The other thing I should note about this, just a little bit of a behind the curtain discussion. You're gonna see some sound bites there called flights, and I believe we have a flight, the flight cut number one. We do not have the second flight cut, so you might eschew the second one at least for now. You are listening to Legion of News. Thank you for joining us on this very fine Thursday. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program graces your ear holes. Today we'll have the top five songs about Superman. Among other things, that is the
top
five songs
about
Superman.
I can only think of two.
Are you thinking of one? Well, see, I don't want to ask.
Yeah, I don't
want to
ask
giving anything sort of away. We've also got Corpse Watch coming up today and Rick Emerson's Joy of Christmas. So as we get ready to plunge into New Year's, we are wrapping up all of our holiday bits of business. So Rick Emerson's Joy of Christmas, Corpse Watch, top five songs about Superman, and more. That is all coming up next hour on the Rick Emerson Show at rickemersonshow.com. This, however, is Dawn Taylor.
A Tel Aviv court found former Israeli President Moshe Katsav guilty of rape and sexual assault on Thursday, ending a four-year scandal that started while he was in office. Katsav was found guilty of raping a former employee while she was tourism minister and of harassing a woman and sexually abusing another during his tenure as president of Israel. In court today, presiding Judge George Kara noted inconsistencies in Katsav's account of events and said his testimony was, quote, strewn with lies. Katsav resigned from the presidency in 2007, 2 weeks before his term was up, over a plea deal that would have wiped away the rape charges. According to the Haaretz newspaper, the verdict has left many wondering if Katsav should have taken the deal. Because of Katsav's poor immigrant background, today's outcome has also stirred deep emotions in Israel, Haaretz says, where the state head of state is supposed to be a beacon of morality and national unity.
Not so much a beacon of rape.
Yeah.
Okay.
The former president was acquitted on one charge, harassing a witness.
You know, here's the thing about countries that have both a president and a prime minister. They got to knock it off because I never know who I'm supposed to care about. You know what I mean? There's, like, you get countries where, because I think Russia's the same way. Because I think because Vladimir Putin is the... Oh, I'm such an ugly American. I believe he is the prime minister of Russia.
Yeah.
And then there's a guy who's the president of Russia. And I never know which... It's like having the royals and you never really know if they can do anything. I'm unclear about whether Prince Charles, for example, could just have a guy killed. I mean, legally.
Legally.
Or if he could just put a guy like in the, you know, or if he could just decide that, like, hey, today everyone gets a taco, you know, or whatever. Or does he just sort of sit around and just sort of sip tea?
That would be the best thing to do, by the way.
Extend his pinky.
If you were, like, a member of royalty.
Wouldn't you?
Just give everyone a taco.
If I ran for president, which I shan't, but if I did, that would be one of the planks of my platform. And I would just say, and I pledge to you here in America that every Wednesday is going to be free taco day. I'm doing Barack Obama sort of there, but I would just, as myself, yeah. I would just say, and I pledge to you that here in these great United States, in our proud republic, every Wednesday, every American shall get a taco. And because
how will you fund this taco venture?
I don't know. I'll sell something to China. How do we fund things now?
I don't know.
We'll just do put on the card, baby. I mean, that's kind of whatever. That's everything just goes on one big sort of Macy's charge account now, I think.
I don't know if you just made some kind of a deal with, you know, Taco Bell or something for free tacos. You know, and then every Wednesday would be National Taco Day.
And then I can fulfill all my Demolition Man fantasies at the same time.
Yeah.
Ah, excellent. All right, I just need to prepare myself a glib witticism before I dispatch a criminal, and it'll be all set. But how great... Okay, I swear to God, I just did a Mr. Burns thing with my fingers.
Yes, you did. You certainly did.
Wow, that's creepy.
Without any sense of irony or anything, you actually sincerely did a Mr. Burns thing with
your
fingers.
On the radio where no one can even see it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm secretly evil, or not so secretly evil. But I bet if you just offered to have somebody, if they sort of sponsored it, you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
If you just had, as they say in radio, if you had third-party dollars attached to that.
And why wouldn't they want to do that? Because people would come in for their free tacos, but others would buy... Enchiladas and
exactly.
Mexicans or whatever those things are called.
We might even, here's the other thing, is you could also do sort of a New Deal type of program where you don't even have to go in for the taco, where the taco actually comes to your home or business. And then they just have census workers, you know, just like checking your name off a list. Don Taylor, free taco. Here you go. Bam, done.
I like the idea, though, that it's sort of an opt-in thing. Because if you don't want a taco,
That's true.
Don't have to have a taco.
But
if you do want a taco, the free taco is available every Wednesday.
If you're some gutless vegan or something, you probably don't want any meat coming to your house. And sully your house with meat.
And then they'll be all whiny because, where's our free soy burger?
Oh, that's the other thing. There's no substitutions. Hey, look, if the government's going to give you a free taco, your ass can't be complaining about it and demanding you. I didn't want a free taco. I wanted something else. You'll take the free taco and like it. Or lump it. Take it down the road and dump it. Did you print something just now?
I did. I checked to see if maybe I could print your sound. No.
It's blank.
What did you do to make... Well, maybe...
It's magic. The thing is, it's not like we're running out of ink. Yes, Dawn, I set the printer on invisible. How cunning of me. I can't find the button to turn it off, though. It's strange. Yeah, I don't know what's... Well, we should just progress with this. We'll just do it off the screen this hour.
I'll just read one of these.
Because it's not like the ink was running out.
No.
And then he's gone. The ink has just stopped printing altogether.
Yeah.
It's just the pages are coming out just dazzlingly white and free of any and all printing.
Yeah. And that's just when you did this document.
Like it's my fault.
It probably is my fault. Yeah.
All right, here's Don Taylor.
New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg defends the city's blizzard cleanup efforts, but he also admits it's been going slower than he'd like. He says there'll be a lot of manpower on the job today.
Is this winter?
Yes.
Today we have some 1,600 plows and other pieces of equipment on the streets, plowing and clearing streets, especially our residential, secondary, and tertiary streets. And the sanitation department will be operating snow melters in Brooklyn, the Bronx, and in Manhattan.
Now, what is it? Operating snow melters? What does that mean, a snow melter?
I don't know. I imagine a guy holding, like, a giant laser cannon and just pointing it down the street and going,
okay.
And melting everything, but that's probably not that cool.
Why it's great that you say that you picture a giant laser cannon is because many years back, like in 1960, in Mad Magazine, you know, Mad Magazine, of course, based in Manhattan, and they've always had, like, you know, huge problems with the storms coming in and the snow just piles up and they can't ever get rid of it because the streets are so narrow that the snow plows can't really work. And so Mad Magazine, as they often have been, they were ahead of the time because they had one of their articles that they were proposing space-age solutions to it. And I swear to God, the thing is that they always propose these things in jest, and then years later they would just come true, and you would realize what an effed world we were living in, that Mad Magazine was at, like, ahead of the cultural and evolutionary curve. One of the things they promoted was a series of trucks that would just drive down the streets, and they had, I swear to God, just big cannons on top that fired hot air. and just melted the snow everywhere.
Hmm.
Under the theory that then if you had ice, at least you could salt the ice, but the snow would be out of the way and the streets would no longer be blocked. So it's funny that you just say a laser cannon because, I mean, it's got to be something like that, right? It can't just be like a thing where they're just like chicken feed, where they're flinging chemical pellets into the snow.
Well, I'm wondering if it's sort of like a snowplow, but it has like heaters along the bottom of it. So as it drives along, it actually melts the snow around and under it.
I have no idea. That seems like a great idea, too. Like a lawnmower, but instead of a blade, it just has like a heating element.
Only it's huge. It's massive.
All right. Yeah, I have no. I have no idea.
It's like a reverse freeze cannon, like Mr. Freeze had in the worst Batman movie.
So, like, it would be sort of a
only it's a warmth cannon.
Well, it would just be like a big hot air like a hair dryer sort of a thing. Nice to meet you.
Bloomberg says he's been touring New York neighborhoods and talking with the residents.
I've learned that in a lot of cases, New Yorkers have been doing what we always do in times of distress, making an extra effort to help each other.
Yeah, that's what New Yorkers are famous for, making the extra effort to help their fellow man. They're Samaritans.
In his first clip, I did notice in the first sound clip, he did say that they were working to clear the primary, secondary, and tertiary streets in New York. I was wondering, if you live on a tertiary street, do you know that? Do you feel bad?
Well, when you say...
I realize primary streets will be like Park Avenue, major commercial arteries. Secondary streets would be like, you know, I guess what?
Are you asking if there's self-awareness?
Well, yeah, because it never occurred to me that I realized there would be primary, you know, traffic arteries, and then there's secondary streets. It didn't occur to me there were also tertiary streets.
Yeah, well, because, okay, so for here, for example, so you got like... So Powell, I would say. So Powell is a primary street, like in terms of Southeast Portland. Powell is a primary street. I would say Division is a secondary street. Because Division is, I mean, in other words, it's a street that runs more or less all the way through Southeast. Everybody knows where it is. It's well known enough you can use it as a direction. You can use it as a fixed point of reference. But a tertiary street would be like, I don't know, like Gladstone or something. I mean, that sounds about right. Or maybe like, you know,
And then you get down to the street you actually live on, which ends up being like a fifth or sixth tier street.
Yeah, or like, like Rhone Street in Southeast, which is what you probably never even heard of.
No.
But it is a street, it's off of Powell. So, but like nobody uses, you just take a left at Rhone Street, because nobody knows the hell you're talking about. If you say Division, people know, but it doesn't necessarily, you don't even really know where Division is, because even though it runs all the way through Southeast, it sort of jags around a little bit. Powell, though, everybody knows.
Yeah. So then you get all the way down to, like, those streets in Southeast that don't even have proper paving. They're just gravel, and people have pens full of chickens.
It's just a dirt road.
And those are, like, your 11th-ary streets.
And they bothered to put up the sign that just says, unfinished. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. By the way, in case anybody is curious, our printer... not printing. Putting out just blindingly white sheets of paper that have no ink on them at all.
Well, just that one document. We haven't tried another document. It could be that particular document that you created.
Except you're trying it now from your machine as a separate document altogether, and in fact on a separate platform, on a Windows machine as a doc. Maybe it's those words. Maybe the words are cursed somehow. It's these cans! Coming up later on, entertainment news, also science on the march. Here is Don Taylor.
The FBI is investigating whether former Senate candidate and celebrity Tea Party nominee Christine O'Donnell broke campaign financing rules, a person with knowledge of the investigation told the Associated Press. The investigation doesn't come out of left field. Before losing Delaware's Senate race to Democrat Chris Coons, O'Donnell had raised more than $7.3 million. And at least two former campaign workers have alleged she routinely used political contributions to pay her personal expenses in recent years as she ran for Senate three consecutive times starting in 2006.
Not a witch, also not a senator.
Also, apparently, I was reading more on this story last night. Has not held a steady job for as long as she's been running for various political positions.
So her job is failed candidate.
Yeah, but she does get, she had a house that was being foreclosed on, and a friend of hers bought it, and she was paying him rent, but now she got behind in the rent, and he was going to kick her out. And apparently the rent she was paying him was coming from her political contributions.
That's awesome.
During the time, O'Donnell had numerous campaign treasurers, many of whom left after serving brief stints. Donnell and her campaign have acknowledged that she sometimes paid her rent with campaign money, but they've denied wrongdoing on the basis that O'Donnell's house was also the campaign's headquarters.
Now, see, I thought your house was not allowed to be your campaign headquarters. I thought that's the way that worked, because if you take...
Yeah, that's still not allowed under federal law.
Yeah, because if you're getting any sort of, like, federal dollars, if you're getting matching funds or anything, then effectively the people in the country is just paying for your house, which they don't really allow.
Yeah.
I've actually got some sound from her.
O'Donnell's saying that, you know, well, we were told by somebody at the Federal Election Commission that it was okay to pay my rent.
Let's see. I'm not sure what the actual setup for these clips are, but let me just let's see. Here's Christine O'Donnell.
Because of things like eggs being thrown at my home and my home being broken into and vandalized, I use that townhome as my legal residency, and I pay the campaign rent in order to do that. I give the campaign money to have that as my legal residency, not the other way around.
But the word you're looking for is residence.
Yeah,
residency is just. It can be a noun, but that's not how you're using it. It's also a state of being. You're looking for the word residence, just FYI.
Yeah.
There's a second cut from Christine O'Donnell.
I am very confident that there have been no impermissible use of campaign funds, and I'd like the opportunity to set the record straight, at least in the court of public opinion.
I am very confident there have been no impermissible use of campaign funds.
Yeah.
I am very confident that there have been no impermissible use of campaign funds, and I'd like the opportunity to set the record straight, at least in the court of public opinion.
It's like my brain becomes more watery just listening to her speak.
She's saying that this is all like Joe Biden out to get her.
That's right. Now it's the liberal media, Dawn.
No, she's actually singled out Joe Biden.
Really?
Yeah.
Like he's hanging outside her house?
Yeah.
I love the idea that maybe he's outside, like in that Crime Stoppers outfit, where he's got like the little, you know, he's got like the fedora pulled down and like the, you know, the collar on his trench coat put up, and he's got the one sort of triangular eye, and he's just sort of looming out like over a trash can in her backyard.
I'll get you, Missy.
Well, what
I'll
else
get
is,
you.
I mean, he's just giving out hot dogs to people in late night talk show audiences. So I mean, really, what else is? What is the last thing Joe Biden did that anybody can think of? And the answer is, it's just the hot dog thing. And apparently terrorizing Christine O'Donnell. Well done.
Well, he's the vice president. The vice president's main job is to go to funerals, isn't it?
I think so.
And then just to stay alive in case the president's plane crashes.
Really, to have a pulse. That's what their constitution requires you to do, I think.
Yeah.
All right. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. And this is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
I did want to give you one quote from Christine O'Donnell that I really liked about this story. She talked to NBC and said that the people making the allegations include a fired former staff member and a former volunteer, both of whom she described as disgruntled.
And Jews.
But she also just keeps saying that Joe Biden is out to get her. And one of the things she said is, given that the king of the Delaware political establishment just so happens to be the vice president of the most liberal presidential administration in U.S. history, it is no surprise that misuse and abuse of the FBI would not be off the table.
Here's the thing is, I think she maybe correlates far more power than actually exists with the title of king of the Delaware political establishment. I think that maybe that does not underscore the nature of her argument by framing it in those terms. I mean, maybe Delaware's. I think we've talked about this before. Isn't your mom from Delaware?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually,
could you find that on a map? Well, you probably could because she probably did.
No,
she tell you, but like, here's where mommy grew up.
I know it's tiny. And it's on the East Coast somewhere.
Is it one of those states that apparently exists in the Atlantic Ocean? Because it's like the name is always out there with a line going in.
I think so.
There's that whole cluster of states that are so small you can't even really see them. You just have to trust. They're like microns. You have to trust that they're there because they can't be seen on a regular map.
Yeah, it's very small and it's over there in that cluster of East Coast states that I don't know how any of them fit together. I also like that O'Donnell's campaign has also... She's also angry at the nonpartisan watchdog group Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, and because they filed a complaint about her campaign spending and asked the federal prosecutor to investigate. So O'Donnell is—it's like they're out to get her.
Well, at the behest of Joe Biden, clearly, who obviously is a power broker of unimaginable proportions.
Damn those watchdog groups with their agendas about. Yeah. Ethics.
I have to say that this is really why I was disappointed that she didn't win, because see, now we only get the entertainment from her every now and again. I mean, she could have been center stage. She could have been amusing us day in and day out.
Well, you know, she's not down yet.
No. Well, apparently this is the only thing she really knows how to do is to run for things and lose. So she
and
just,
then complain a lot.
Yeah, all she needs to do is just change the middle half of that equation. It will be good. And yes, I just said middle half. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Oh, let's do our science.
Here's your science on the march for Thursday at Cascadia.fm. This is Legion of News.
Cheetah births in captivity are rare, so the Smithsonian Conservation Biology Institute has proudly announced the birth of two cubs born to two separate females. According to a press release from the Front Royal Virginia facility, 5-year-old Amani gave birth on December 6th, and 9-year-old Zazie had her cub on December 16th. Cub. The births resulted in the facility's first ever cheetah cubs. Since mother cheetahs that produce only one cub, called a singleton, cannot make enough milk to keep the cub alive, scientists at the Smithsonian gave Amani's cub to Zazie to nurse after it was hand-raised by staff for 13 days. It's hoped that having two cubs will stimulate Zazie to make a sufficient amount of milk. They realized that Amani had had a singleton, removed the cub to hand-rear it, so when Zazie gave birth, they figured it was a perfect opportunity to give both cubs a chance at survival. Amani's cub has already undergone extensive testing, including an MRI, because the newborn displayed some worrisome tremors during the first few weeks of life. At first, scientists thought the cub had hypothermia, but it displays normal growth and appetite. Then they suspected a congenital brain disorder, but so far there's been no proof of that, and the cub seems to be doing fine.
I always thought that singleton was a term made up by Helen Fielding.
I thought so, too,
right.
But apparently not.
Singleton is like the signage of the animal parenting world. Just taking a perfectly good word and just sticking extra letters on the end of it for no reason. Also, is this another one of those things like that stupid panda story that we had to hear like every week for years and years about how they apparently wouldn't have sex with people gathered outside the cage watching them, strangely enough? Where like they couldn't... Remember, was it like Ling Ling or
yeah.
Wang Nang or whatever? Something
that sounds like a Chuck Berry record.
The pandas at the zoo or whatever, and it's like they just couldn't get them to hump. And it's like there's just, and they've just got like a bunch of guys standing around with cameras filming them like every moment of the day. They're like, I don't know, they seem to be embarrassed. There's some sort of awkwardness happening. We can't get him to take his penis out. So, and then they eventually did. And so we moved on to, I guess, Zanzi and Franzi or whoever.
Well, this is the thing that, you know, when you have wild animals in captivity, a lot of them, yeah, they have trouble breeding at all. And then cheetah cubs are one of those animals that they have a very low mortality rate in captivity.
That's like saying if I just took you and Patrick and stuck you at the top of a tree. Like, it would be surprising if you didn't immediately just start, you know, getting it on. I mean, you probably would eventually, but it would take a while. You'd have to set the mood
might.
And so forth.
And if there were a bunch of guys standing around with cameras, it would take even longer,
yeah,
I'm sure.
That's what I'm saying.
Maybe they need to look at porn. We'll show them panda porn. That'll get them excited.
Is that an urban legend? Do we really show porn to pandas?
I think they did, yes. I think they attempted that. They were trying anything at some point. I think what it really just came down to is that those pandas didn't really like each other very much. And it was just sort of, why won't they have sex? Well, they don't like each other.
Well, you figure eventually that's less of a problem for one of them than for the other.
No.
I mean, I'm just saying based on my own life experience. I'm just speculating.
If you get them drunk enough.
I could be way off. Yeah. I mean, it's like you don't want to eat at 7-Eleven. But, I mean, if it's 2 a.m., sometimes there's just nothing else that's open.
Yeah. I've been there, sister. Smokers
okay.
in New... Smokers in New York City won't have to face gruesome reminders of the effects of cigarettes when they go to get their smokes anymore, a federal judge has ruled. The Wall Street Journal reports that a federal judge struck down a proposed campaign that would have required explicit anti-smoking ads in any location selling tobacco. The ads included images of brains damaged by stroke, decaying teeth, and diseased lungs. The law requiring the ads is preempted by federal law, the judge ruled. Smoking is in the decline in the U.S., though the rate of that decline is slowing. According to the Centers for Disease Control, 20.6% of Americans still smoke. Research suggests that people often justify their bad habits to themselves, even if they understand the risks. Nevertheless, the public health cost of smoking has sparked action. Many cities and states now restrict smoking in public locations. Sin taxes on cigarettes are another deterrent. Even without New York City's anti-smoking ads, however, smokers may not avoid ugly graphic images for long. The FDA is now considering a selection of 36 graphic new cigarette warning labels, including one depicting a man smoking out of a hole in his neck.
You know, it's sort of like, so it becomes like the sort of Garbage Pail Kids of the smoking world, where it's like a collect them all kind of
a thing.
Yeah,
I really, and again, amongst a certain stripe of smoker, that's really not going to be that effective. Well, I mean, I remember when I first started smoking, I used to smoke these rather awful cigarettes called Death cigarettes, and they came in a black pack with
Black Death.
A skull and crossbones on them?
Black Death cigarettes.
Yeah.
I have a pack of those at home. I have a pack of those still sealed sitting right near my writing chair in my office.
And they were really raspy, unpleasant tasting cigarettes.
Yeah.
But the pack was so cool.
Yeah.
How could you not buy those?
So those are made by, those are licensed by the same company that made Black Death vodka, which I also own because Slash used to drink it. And so I had a friend of mine when I was too young to legally purchase alcohol, I had a friend of mine buy that and hold it for me until I became 21. And then, so I have this bottle of Black Death vodka made by the Segundi family, and then they license their image to Black Death cigarettes, which are freaking awesome looking.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what I would smoke if I were a smoker.
I used to drive all the way into Hollywood and go to a store on Melrose where I knew they sold them just to buy like several packs of those so I would have them.
So you'd look awesome.
So I would look awesome.
The best part is have on the side, it actually says a blend of the finest Turkish tobaccos. I mean, really, it's just, you know, it's just like tar and cancer and dust and weevils.
And they tasted awful, and they made you cough. They were bad cigarettes.
And here's the other thing. It's like you don't need let's just be honest. If you smoke, you become your own disturbing picture eventually anyway. Like, you don't need to look at the pack. Look in the mirror. I mean, so it's not like it doesn't, you know, you'll get it eventually.
But you put a bunch of those pictures on the different cigarette packs, and people are just going to be standing around going, which one do you got? Oh, I got the blackened lungs. Oh, I got the guy with the hole in his throat.
I am surprised that smoking is down to 20%, though. I thought it still would be higher than that. I know that it's, you know, it is a thing that's on its way out in this country, at least. But I didn't realize it, you know, that for whatever reason, whatever the cause of it is, that all of those reasons had been quite that successful. I would have put it in the 30s somewhere.
I would imagine, honestly, probably more people smoke than that. They just don't admit it. Because I know when you go to the doctor now, every time you go to the doctor, you know, they take your blood pressure and they weigh you and they go and they check you. You still smoking?
Right.
You know, and so you say no because, you know, you don't want them to know.
And the other reason you don't want them to know you're smoking if you go to the doctor is because people always believe that there's something exotic wrong with them, and smoking causes, like, every problem on Earth. And so if you tell them that you smoke, whether or not that is the reason, they will decide that that is the reason.
Well, and also there's this, I think, I'm probably not the only one that it's occurred to me that it's like, at some point, an insurance company might decide not to renew my policy if it says I'm a smoker on my medical records.
Well, at some point, your company might decide to terminate your employment because they're paying your insurance.
Yes.
I mean, that's the other thing.
So just say you don't smoke.
Yeah. No, I actually know a guy. So I know a guy who told when he got a job and he signed up for their company health plan. And the health plan, you know, that you go and you get the physical and the whatever, and they test. And he actually was asked if he was a smoker, and he said no. And they caught him smoking, and they fired him and terminated his insurance.
Jesus.
Because they said, well, look, they said, well, we're willing to pay for your insurance, but you got to give us the straight story up front. And he did not. So, I'm unclear about whether you can do that in like every state, but that does seem to be a thing that is coming to your town soon, probably.
Yes. British and U.S. scientists say they've compiled the most comprehensive list of land plant species ever published, a 300,000 species strong compendium they hope will boost conservation, trade, and medicine. The list, drawn up by researchers at Kew Gardens in London and the Missouri Botanical Garden in St. Louis, is intended to help resolve one of botany's most basic problems, figuring out which plants go by which name. Some plants have been labeled differently by researchers operating in different countries over the past century, while in other cases, the different variants of the same plant have been erroneously identified as belonging to different species. There are also cases in which plants' names have been applied mistakenly or just misspelled. So scientists say that attaching different labels to the same plant can rob researchers of the chance to get the information they need. It's a problem that frustrates everyone, from agricultural regulators to pharmaceutical researchers. Alan Payton, one of the Royal Botanic Gardens colleagues, said, "Imagine trying to find everything that's ever been published about a plant, which chemicals are in it, whether it's poisonous or not, where it's found. To find that information, you need to know all of the different scientific names that have ever been used for it."
Here's a famous example of that, which is chrysanthemum. Chrysanthemum is actually, this is in that Brief History of Nearly Everything by Bill Bryson. He talks about this problem that things have been named incorrectly and often named more than once. So they would find plants, and it wasn't just plants. I mean, there were dinosaurs that were, like, discovered five or six different times by different people, each of whom would give them a different name, and, you know, because you never find a complete skeleton. And so they would just call it something different. Apparently, chrysanthemums, if I'm remembering the story correctly, scientifically speaking, for some reason, the name chrysanthemum is not accurate. They should be called something else. And at one point, there was a move by, like, and it was some unbelievably tiny splinter group of the Royal Botanical Society. And, like, in their monthly newsletter, they put forward that they were going to be changing the name of chrysanthemums, and scientifically, they were going to be classed as something else. And as he described it, it was like the most, it was just the most intense and insane uproar that anybody had ever heard in the world of botany. And it was, you know, and he said, lives were torn asunder, friendships irrevocably severed, until at last it was decided that they would remain chrysanthemums in the interest of peace. And it's like, I guess it's one of those things that scientists have, like, these knockdown, drag-out fights about. Apparently, taxonomy, which is the pursuit of naming things. Taxonomy is the field in which things are classified and named. Is just insanely competitive, and people take it like there's like these huge grudges that develop over decades about the names of things, scientific and otherwise.
Well, look at how intense arguments get about, like, GoBots versus Transformers.
Exactly.
I mean, now imagine that you're actually a scientist and this is something really important. And so you're a geek, and you've devoted your entire life to this.
Death metal versus grindcore.
I'm surprised more people don't get shot over it, really. Anyway, the plant compendium, the researchers in the U.S. and Britain have been basically collecting all of the existing databases and then combining them with checklists from organizations like the World Checklist of Selected Plant Families and the International Legume Database and Information Service.
That's awesome. I can imagine that guy sending out a memo, too. You know, it's like, you know, to all from, you know, John St. John. I need everything. And then they just sort of look and they go, what do you mean? He goes, I need a list of everything. Well, what do you mean? Well, just
everything
you've got. I need a list of it by close of business this week. If we could possibly do that, it'd be great. Thanks.
Yeah, the final list they came up with had over a million scientific names, of which 300,000 are accepted names for plant species. Another 480,000 are additional names or synonyms for those species. And the rest are just completely unresolved. Everything from unidentified plants to completely different organisms that maybe aren't even plants, and they're having to, like, sift through all that stuff.
Jesus. I mean, in plants, I mean, at least it's easy with plants because it's like if you spot something, it's still growing. I mean, at least you can stick in a pot for a while and see what happens, you know, and you can figure out what its characteristics are. They, you know, with fossils, I guess, apparently, like, one in 1,000 fossil finds has even enough bones to figure out what the thing is. Apparently the rest of them are all just a big, you know, it's just a big pile of crap and you're never going to be able to identify it as anything, so.
Did you see that thing about the woman who dissolved, it was on Discovery Channel, the woman who was an archaeologist and she had accidentally dissolved the bones. She was looking at the fossils and then discovered that there was actual manipulatable, like almost like cartilage. It dissolved the bone, but she found there was like a malleable material and then realized, oh my God, these are blood vessels.
Oh, that's weird.
They're actual dinosaur blood vessels. And then the person who was interviewing said, so did you immediately like rush out and tell your boss?
Right.
She goes, no, because I figured it had to be a mistake and they would like laugh at me. So then she just went
stuck it in a box,
attempted to replicate it several times. And then once she figured out, no, that's really what it is, she went to her boss and said, I think these are blood vessels from, you know,
a dinosaur.
Yeah. And they did it and they replicated it over and over again. Then they tried it doing some stuff with like chickens and stuff. And now they're doing experiments with chickens where they're trying to reverse engineer dinosaurs using chickens to see if they can figure out how dinosaurs evolved by basically doing it backwards from chickens.
That's fantastic. Well, there's going to be hell to pay, though. I'm telling you right now. It's like that whole that whole Chick-fil-A thing is going to come back, and that's going to bite us in the ass like you wouldn't believe. Jesus.
That's all the science.
You are listening to Legion of News. That is your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com. SquiresElectric.com, or you can call them. Their phone number is 503-252-1609. When you call, I was going to say ask for Donna, but you know that you'll probably get, I think Donna is the one who answers the phone. So by and large, I mean, all things being equal, Donna will answer the phone. She's a charming woman, occasionally a tad unpredictable in the most glorious way. But she will hand you over to the appropriate party, and you can talk to them about coming out to your home to handle, you know, electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, intercom wiring, your business, your Cat 5, which I was having a discussion about this morning. I swear to God.
Did you find out what that is?
Not as such, but I nodded. And I sort of smiled knowingly, and I said, I know what you're talking about. Cat 5. Wow. So a friend of mine is a radio engineer, and he was talking about, he's like, and then we got to replace all this Cat 5 wiring. And he's like, you know what a pain that is, he said. And then he just like, and then the sentence just trailed off. And I said, do I ever?
Cat 5.
Kind of chucked him on the shoulder. So
I don't envy you that, brother.
So if you find yourself more in the me camp than the he camp, you can contact Squires Electric, and they'll take care of all that stuff for you. As you get into the new year, they will make sure that your business, your home, your expanded business, your expanded office, whatever it is you're dealing with, is going to be wired correctly. 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. They wired this, the studio of the Emerson News Network. So good enough for us, good enough for you, my friend. 503-252-1609 or Squires Electric. .com. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Yeah, and don't be afraid of saying that you might say something inappropriate when you're talking to Donna.
Because
honestly, she may just surprise you.
She'll beat you to the punch on that, probably.
A medical marijuana dispensary in Soquel, California, helped Watsonville's Second Harvest Food Bank meet the high demand this holiday season by offering a complimentary pre-rolled joint for every 4 cans of food donated by patients.
Awesome.
It was an unusual venture, trading food for marijuana, but organizers said they rolled in the donations because of the deal. Actually, I skipped the part where they said it was an unusual joint venture.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't want to say that. Thanks. From November through Christmas Eve, medical marijuana patients at Granny Perp's in Soquel got a complimentary marijuana joint for every 4 cans of food they donated to Second Harvest.
It was a green Christmas, Don.
There was a limit of 3 complimentary joints per day for each patient. One patient who gave her name as Melody talked about participating in the drive. She thought it was a great idea. It's helped people who are hungry, and it's helped people like me that need medication, she said. I have this happy little band, shows her armband, and it's because I've had surgery from cancer. Granny Perps has taken in around 11,000 pounds of food while handing out about 2,000 joints since the food drive started. The dispensary owner said she was not surprised by the response. She said, everybody that works here, everybody that comes in here, we're all interested in helping people and making people better. So a food drive goes along with that. Some of the bigger contributors have been struggling to make goals this season for donations to Second Harvest. The smaller events where stores were raising 10, 12, 15,000 pounds of food are beginning to be like a major contributor to these efforts. I think this is pretty standard across the country right now. Food drives that people used to just bring massive amounts of food in at Christmas time. Not seeing so many donations.
People are eating the food.
Second Harvest provides food for about 50,000 people every month.
By the way, I like the idea that there was this huge, the ballot referendum about whether or not they were going to decriminalize marijuana, and then it got voted down. But really, like, no one seems to have paid any attention to that. Like, I mean, they're just giving up marijuana in exchange for cans of food.
Well, that is California.
But that was where they were saying that, this is a huge, this is a litmus test. This, you know, the passage or failure of this measure will determine the future of marijuana legalization. And it failed, and everybody just kind of went, okay, all right. Well, in any event, we're giving out free joints, you know? And, I mean, it's just, can you imagine, even like 10 or 15 years ago, the idea of that would just be like a mainstream news story, that they were just giving out the weed in exchange for, you know, cans of food at a food bank. I mean, I know that there's sort of regulations and strictures and whatnot, but I mean, still, that is, in my youth, that is not a thing that I could have, I could have seen happening.
No.
That is a little bit of a, so inch by inch, the progress comes.
Corporate ethics firm Global Compliance is passing the holiday downtime by ranking TV shows according to violations of workplace ethics within the fictional workplace. They named NBC's 30 Rock, which averages 11 ethical faux pas per episode. For example, on one show, Jack, played by Alec Baldwin, comments that a chick lawyer who handles sexual harassment presentations is asking for it. According to Global Compliance, Jack's remark violates diversity, equal opportunity, and respect in the workplace laws. Runners-up include Grey's Anatomy, with an average of 7 violations per episode, and CSI and House.
I was just going to ask what House was on the list.
Cracks about rectal exams and colonoscopies apparently don't go over well with political correctness groups. Ugly Betty and Glee fared better, averaging only 2 ethical violations per show.
It does make me wonder, actually, where The Office is on that, because part of the humor from The Office comes from the fact that it is like this sort of, you know, very drony, drudge-filled work environment that is very similar to real life, but not similar to real life in other ways. You know, like, what did I watch that? It was just that moment where somebody had, like, they were learning CPR, and somebody had a Recessi Annie doll, and then Dwight decided that he needed to massage the heart of the doll to bring it back to life, so he pulled out a huge knife and just started cutting the doll open. And, "Stand back! Don't let the bastard win!" And, like, you know, it was like cutting the doll open and reaching inside to massage the innards.
Oh, so, God.
You are listening to Legion of Dudes right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. Today we'll be featuring the top 5 songs about Superman. Also Corpse Watch. Also Joy of Christmas. Tomorrow on the Rick Emerson Show, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with his year-end installment of Humor Me Comedy 101, talking about the life, career, and work of Mr. George Carlin. So you can find out more about that at rickemersonshow.com, where you can be amused for hour after hour after hour. And in fact, 24 hours a day via the ultra-handy Rick Emerson live stream for just 32 cents a day, ladies and gentlemen.
And some days when we just actually don't feel like going home, the show does go on for hour after hour after hour.
Really? Because that's the great thing, is there's just no one to kick us out. So so sometimes we're just here seemingly forever for the low cost of just 32 pennies a day. So you can find out more at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
13 rowdy bulls are back in their pens after breaking out Thursday morning and wreaking havoc in New Holland, Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. The bulls escaped from the New Holland Sales Stables barn around 8 a.m. Crews and police spread out through New Holland and worked to corral all of the bulls. Workers had their hands full. One bull that was in the parking lot behind Chase Windows and Doors along Route 23 charged a man and rammed into a fence in an SUV. Handlers were eventually able to get the animal into a trailer. Handlers cornered another bull in a backyard. The animal faced off with about a half a dozen men who worked to catch it. We don't have that problem here. We usually just have llamas that get out here.
You know,
that's
there was
not as dangerous.
There was a story in the news the other day about an emu that had wandered away from its home in Hillsborough somewhere. It was an emu, and then it's like, you know, then I was sort of, you know, I always hope that those animals make it into downtown somehow, which seems implausible. That's probably not going to happen, especially with the emu, which I believe is a winged but flightless animal.
Yes.
I just like the idea of there being, you know, like, it's another thing I would do if I was president. It wouldn't just be like free tacos once a week. It's every now and again I would just inject a little bit of local color, you know, just a little bit of shimmering thread into the human tapestry, like letting a whole bunch of emu, you know, loose downtown. You know, just for, with a guy kind of following behind to make sure they didn't screw things up too badly. But, you know, just so you come out of your office someday and you just see an emu crossing the street or a zebra.
Or you could, like, fly an airplane over a city and just, like, sort of mist the city so that everything smells like pie.
See, there you go. Now, see, if you and I together, if we were able to put the platform together, because Americans can't grasp, you know, it's like the idea that they're going to be able to figure out, like, the nuances of, like, a nuclear treaty or the ins and outs of budget versus deficit versus a debt ratio. No. But if you told people pie, tacos, perhaps a zebra ride now and again, that's a thing you could get people to vote for.
And those things would keep people cheerful, too. If, like, you know, every couple of days there was something in the news, it's like, well, today the president flew 14 jets over the city of Chicago and made everything smell like pie.
I mean, that's enough to take your mind off your troubles for a good day or two, I would imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine the people in New York right now could do with some pie scent. You know, it's during times like this when, you know, I have some compatriots of mine on the East Coast from whom I have not heard in a while. And then as you start to think, I wonder if they're dead in their apartment because they're snowed in and nobody's there to help them. Every time something like this happens in some part of the country, I then make a list of people I know who live in that part of the world. And if I don't hear from them for a few days, or if I, like, you know, if I call them or something, don't hear back, then it's like I immediately just assume that the worst has happened.
You just write them off?
Yeah, that they're just like, you know, that it's like they held out in a snow cave for as long as possible. But really, you know, nature took its course and I have to find new friends. That's probably not true, but that's how my mind works. Here's Don Taylor.
On New Year's Day, emergency rooms typically see a huge spike in the number of visits involving underage drinking. Peter Delaney with the Center for Behavioral Health Statistics and Quality says oftentimes adults are telling kids not to drink, but they're drinking heavily themselves.
With that kind of a mixed message and the access, I think it's inevitable we're going to have a larger number of people ending up over-consuming because they're not really mature enough to make good judgments.
Delaney says that mixed messages are largely to blame.
There's a whole series of mixed messages we give to kids is, you know, don't drink, but drinking is pretty well imbued with this holiday. And I think parents probably inadvertently give mixed messages when they're drinking a lot over New Year's holiday.
Oh, I suppose mom and dad could actually stay home with the children they decided to have, but that's just me.
I think, hey, I like getting all hooched up and you're too young to drink isn't actually a mixed message at all.
That's also it's also not effective. That's that's the other thing. Is like here's a little trade secret from me to you. I guess you could stay home and you could like literally just watch your. I mean, if we're talking about actual children, like you got like a 9-year old, you know, the solution is you don't go out. I mean, that's the or wear a rubber, you know, before you have the kid. One of the two.
And if your 9-year old is getting hammered on New Year's Eve, that you've got problems that go way beyond
a larger
mixed
issue
messages.
But here's the other thing. The other thing is if you're talking about like 16, 17, 18 year olds. I mean, I think the reality the parents just don't like to face, and something that I can lecture on, in a tiresome and tedious manner without actually having to follow up on it myself or to actually practice what I preach because I don't have kids, which is sort of a freeing kind of hypocrisy in which I can engage just, day in and day out. But if your 17-year-old just decides they want to get high or drink, like, here's the thing. There's nothing you can do to stop it.
Yeah.
And people won't tell you that. Schools will lie to you and the president will lie to you and the public service announcements will lie to you. Media people will lie to you. There's nothing you can do. If your kid wants to have sex, can't stop it. When they get high, can't stop it. Going to sneak out of the house at night, can't stop it. Nothing you can do. You're helpless.
Yeah, my mother told me that, you know, I was not allowed to drink her booze when I was a teenager.
Not allowed to drink her booze.
Well, it was just her, she and
this
I.
This is for mommy.
The two of us were just, we're living together.
So. Mama needs her medicine. You get your own.
But, I was supposed to keep out of the room. And then, you know, the governmental entities told me that at the age of 16, too young to drink. But that, you know, again, though, had a friend whose dad was a businessman and flew all the time and brought home pocketfuls of those little tiny
bottles
from the airlines. And we would like, she'd pocket a couple of those and we'd drink them like on our walk to school in the morning.
Yeah, it doesn't help that every liquor cabinet can be opened with a butter knife, by the way.
It's like, if teenagers want to drink, they're just going to drink.
Yeah, well, you know, Sarah talks about it. I mean, whenever we meet anybody who has a... who's pregnant or somebody who's having a kid, it's just like a countdown until they tell Sarah to, like, you know, they start giving her the list of things she can and cannot talk to the child about as the child ages. And one of them is the ease with which she was able to replace her parents' vodka with water, and they didn't notice.
Every kid figures that out on their own, though.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the thing. It's like it's not like it requires Sarah or Dawn going to the house and telling the kid, you know, to get all loaded up. Just any more than you need to tell the kid, you know, like what a Hustler magazine is for. They sort of figure that out. They intuit that, I would say.
Well, this fella Delaney says a number of negative behaviors are associated with overconsumption.
I'm sorry, is this New Year's 3?
Yes.
I think New Year's 3 is just a longer version of New Year's 2. Let's just assume he says more tiresome gibberish.
That you'll get a headache and things are bad and your liver will go bad. You'll crash your car into something, so don't do that.
But what can you do?
Yeah.
Here is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
Speaking of overconsumption, a woman who drove with almost 8 times the legal limit of alcohol in her system outraged police and left them wondering how she was able to stay conscious to commit the crime. The 38-year-old woman was pulled over after police allegedly noticed her driving erratically in the northeast Australian city of Townsville about 10 p.m. on Tuesday. She recorded a dangerously high blood alcohol concentration of 0.378, which medical experts warn borders on the level of alcohol toxicity and is well above the 0.05 limit. Sergeant Gary Eddiehausen said it was lucky two of his officers caught the woman before tragedy struck. You wonder why people drink and drive at all, let alone at that reading, he said. You wonder if she's still conscious, really, but the chances of her injuring herself and, more importantly, the other road users is extremely high. The General Practice Network chairman, whatever that means, Dr. Kevin Arlett, said he was surprised the woman would have been able to drive a car at all. She'd be very poorly coordinated at the level, have difficulty maintaining the car on the road, I'd have thought. Certainly her reaction time would be fairly delayed, so if she did get in an accident, she wouldn't be able to respond to that and her judgment would be impaired as well. Even without getting behind the wheel, he said, the woman would have been putting her life in danger. 0.378 is getting up towards alcohol toxicity levels, which can immediately damage the liver and the brain.
That's one of those things where you don't want to sort of go like, well done, but you do anyway. Like inside, you kind of commend her for being at three times the legal limit and still being able to. I mean, she get pulled over for drunk driving, though? Is that what they?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, but she was still able to operate the car,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, she was still conscious.
It's like, I know people who have a few drinks and it's like they can't button their pants.
Yeah.
You know, so the fact that she was able to operate a motor vehicle at all is, you don't want to say it's impressive, but here's the thing, it is.
You know how she was able to drink that much and still be conscious and drive a car?
Mm.
She's Australian.
Well, that is true. They that they're sort of, you know, it's like they're prize fighters always in training in that regard.
Yes.
All right.
More than 10,000 flights were canceled since the weekend because of the winter weather. At JFK, some passengers on international flights had to wait up to 11 hours on the tarmac before being allowed to deplane.
God damn.
Brandon Maxada with the Association for Passenger Rights says other passengers were left hanging, not knowing what to do.
Now, this is interesting because they've gone to not only a different spokesperson, but I believe this is a different organization.
It is. It is. So apparently,
they had their fill of whatever her name was.
Nikki Kinty, or whatever her name was, the crazy woman.
I've completely flushed her out of my memory. All I remember, I just recall that she was sort of,
yeah.
It was just like sort of an unpleasant squawking coming from her. All right, so this guy says what about something?
He says other passengers were left hanging.
You know, we hear stories where people can't even get information as to when they might be able to get a new flight. That goes to the issue of, you know, the phone systems being overloaded.
All right.
He says many people couldn't get a hold of their airlines on the phone. They should have been better prepared.
Let's see here. This is the that second cut, which I did not initially have.
We don't blame the airlines or the airports, for that matter, for bad weather. We most certainly do hold them responsible for being able to react when a situation like this arises.
Well, that is one of those things where, see, as much as it's not like the airline's responsibility to get you a hotel room or something, here's the thing that is increasingly frustrating. It's when they just don't have anybody there to even, like, answer the phone.
Yeah.
And I know that...
They don't have any kind of a plan in place at all in case something happens that everybody's socked in because of the weather.
Right. And I know there's thousands of people flying, but you also got to figure that all the airlines are sort of in this together. So if they all pooled their resources, it seems like that is a thing that they could get covered. They could at least have some sort of infrastructure in place to respond to people, even if they're not able to fix your problem. Because it's not, I mean, this doesn't happen all the time, but it does happen. I mean, it's not like this is the first time we've ever, not like the first time people have ever been snowed in an airport or something.
No, every couple of years this happens.
You think they'd have like a booklet in one of those red envelopes that you got to break with the codes or something. And then you bust out the emergency apparatus.
Let's do some entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Thursday, December 30th, 2010.
Actor Rupert Everett cited Jennifer Aniston as an example of a star who remains on Hollywood's A-list no matter how their films bomb at the box office. In an interview with BBC Radio 4, he said, "If you look and analyze the careers of many, many stars, you'll find that they're mostly sustained by the business. You'll find that there's lots of women and lots of men in the business that the powers that be decide are right for their business, and they'll stand with them for quite a long time. Okay, something will go wrong, like Jennifer Aniston will have one too many flops, but she's still a member of the club, and she'll still manage to, like a star forming in the universe, things will swirl around her, and it'll suddenly solidify into another vital, tasteless rom-com, a little glitter next to the Crab Nebula."
Now, we were just talking about this on the Rick Emerson Show a few weeks ago with Eric D. Snyder. We were talking about people who have several failed films in a row. I think we were talking about it after Leslie Nielsen, because we were talking about how he did so many bad films, but it's like the stink of those films never got on him.
Yeah.
But that led into a conversation about people like Christopher Walken and Tommy Lee Jones, who just do endless amounts of bad films, but it's like you still think of, you know, like Tommy Lee Jones is still more or less an A-lister. Like, in other words, he's a guy that has, nobody has a bad opinion of him, and his Q factor, his recognition factor is still really, really high.
Well, that happened to Harrison Ford. I mean, he was just making crummy movies for a while, but
like Teflon. It just doesn't have any effect on him.
Yeah.
So Jennifer Aniston very much is the same way, because her hit-to-miss ratio is so unbelievably skewed by this point, but if you asked anybody on Earth if she was still a huge star, they would all say yes, whether or not that's actually true.
And people seem, for some reason or another, to care whether or not she's going to have a baby ever. That's the thing in the tabloids and on those magazines all the time is Jen wants a baby. Is Jen gonna have a baby? Is she gonna have a baby with Vince Vaughn? Is she gonna have a baby with John Mayer? I hope she has a baby. I'm like, why does everyone care so much whether Jennifer Aniston breeds?
Maybe this is because we're all looking in her windows late at night. We should stop that and show her some porn.
Former Public Enemy member and Flavor of Love star Flavor Flav is penning his autobiography. The book will be released in March and detail his successful hip-hop career, his drug abuse problems, and his comeback as a reality TV staple. John Leguizamo is headed back to Broadway early next year for a play called Ghetto Clown, his latest installment of his popular series of autobiographical works, which includes Freak and Sexaholics, a Love Story. Ghetto Clown is all the things I say to my therapist and my manager, but would never want the general public to know, he said
God
in a statement.
I love John Leguizamo. He's just the greatest guy.
He is.
I remember the first time I saw Freak, and it just blew my mind. You can actually get it as a book, too. He and his director actually, they published an adapted version of the script as a hardcover book. I remember I kind of knew him from, I guess, Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
Was the thing I'd seen him in. And I don't think I'd seen him in much else before then, because I don't know. Here's a question. Maybe everybody knows this from me. What was John Leguizamo's, like, breakthrough role? Because I don't really remember.
It might have been Tu Wong Fu.
I guess. But he must have been known. I mean, he wasn't an unknown when he was cast in that, was he?
I wouldn't say he was an unknown, but he certainly wasn't.
Maybe he's one of those guys who was.
Name.
Maybe he was known to other actors or to the director. But so I guess maybe I knew him from that and from Romeo and Juliet, where, you know, he was good, but he didn't really stand out. And then I was flipping by, I was flipping around on HBO one night, and I landed on Freak, and I just caught like the last 10 minutes of it. And I was like, oh, my God, what is this?
Yeah, that's brilliant.
And then I actually waited. I stayed up that night until it was on again because I caught it at like 9, and I stayed up until like 2 a.m. or something when they started it again. And I watched it again from the beginning, and I watched it 2 or 3 times over the next couple of days. And it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And that was really when I just turned the corner on that guy, which is why, by the way, why it's so sort of great and terrible when you then see him in The Happening or something like that. You're just like, what are you doing? Like, why? And I mean, and just... I mean, not even phoning it in. I mean, it's like he's like delivering it via Western Union. I mean, it's like you wonder if he even knew any of the lines before he got to the, or if he's just shouting like line before each take, and they're feeding it to him, and he like wraps it up, and he's done by noon or something. So bad,
yeah.
So unbelievably bad. All right, well, we should end today's program.
Yes.
Coming up next hour at rickemerson.com, it is the Rick Emerson radio program. Find out more at rickemersonshow.com. We will be back again tomorrow at noon, as we are every Monday through Friday, from noon to 1 p.m. for Legion of News. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. This show available later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. Thank you for joining us. Have a fantastic Thursday. We'll see you again tomorrow. This is Legion of News.